This is VOA News. I'm Alexis Strope. The White House is confirming the death of an American-Israeli woman who had been thought to have been taken hostage by on October 7th in Israel. AP correspondent Jackie Quinn reports.
President Biden says he was devastated to learn 70-year-old Judith Weinstein had been killed during the Hamas attack on an Israeli kibbutz in October. Her kibbutz is reporting Weinstein, originally from New York, who had been teaching children with special needs in Israel, actually died October 7th along with her husband. But because their bodies were taken by militants, it was thought they were held as hostages. In Tel Aviv, other families rallied for more releases. But in Beirut, a Hamas official announced a temporary ceasefire would not be enough to release the rest of the hostages, calling for an end to the Israeli military action. I'm Jackie Quinn.
The U.S. is imposing sanctions on a group of money exchange services from Yemen to Turkey, alleged to be providing funds to Iranian-backed Houthi rebels who have been launching attacks on commercial shipping vessels in the southern Red Sea. The sanctions imposed Thursday target the head of a financial intermediary in Sana'a, Yemen, and three exchange houses in both Yemen and Turkey. Maine's Democratic Secretary of State is removing former President Donald Trump from that state's primary ballot. Shenna Bellows becomes the first election official to take action unilaterally to bar Trump under the insurrection clause of the 14th Amendment. The Civil War era clause bans those who, quote, engage in insurrection from office. It's the same provision cited recently by the Colorado Supreme Court to remove Trump from the ballot in that state. The U.S. Supreme Court will likely rule on whether the provision applies to Trump and whether he can still run for president. For additional stories, visit voanews.com 24 hours a day. This is VOA News. Port Sudan, which lies on Sudan's Red Sea coast, is facing a cholera outbreak exacerbated by lack of medical supplies as the country remains in the grips of war. VOA's Kim Lewis has more.
A university dorm that was hosting students has been converted into a shelter for the displaced, housing at least 1,000 people. Among the displaced is Julia Adam. Adam says one of her daughters died a month ago from cholera, and the other girl recovered and is with her. Dr. Alam Abdullah, the Director General of the Red Sea Province Health Sector at the Ministry of Health, says there have been 2,237 cases of cholera so far. Kim Lewis, VOA News.
Deutsche Bank has pledged nearly $5 million in funding to help combat human trafficking in New Mexico. The bank made the announcement Thursday in a joint statement with State Attorney General Raul Torres. The announcement comes 7 months after Deutsche Bank settled a lawsuit that claimed the German lender should have seen the evidence that the late Jerry Epstein, who was a client, engaged in sex trafficking. Torres's office is investigating several financial service companies and their role in what he says is a failure to identify sexual abuse and trafficking of underage girls at Epstein's ranch in Santa Fe County. Deep in the Amazon rainforest, Brazil is fighting destructive wildcat gold mining as it spreads from indigenous lands into government-protected conservation areas. Olivia Chan from Reuters has more.
The miners had cut down swathes of jungle and dug dozens of ponds to dredge for gold. Sydney Seraphim is the mission commander for the three-week operation.
We have more than 20 illegal miners and more than 20 clandestine airstrips located here.
Seraphim added that even after law enforcement destroyed miners' camps, they keep coming back. Leftist President Luiz Inácio Lula da Silva's government has already been cracking down on mining on indigenous lands, but that has pushed some miners to other forests where there has been little enforcement. Lula has vowed to stamp out illegal mining and end deforestation by 2030. That's a sharp reversal of policy from his predecessor, Jair Bolsonaro, who was criticized globally for relaxing environmental controls, as well as giving illegal loggers and miners free range in the Amazon. He argued that Brazil had the right to develop its natural resources.
Olivia Chan from Reuters. The U.S. military has launched its secret space plane on another mission that's expected to last at least a couple of years, known as the X-37B. The mini space shuttle blasted off from NASA's Kennedy Space Center on Thursday aboard a SpaceX rocket. The Space Force's reusable robotic craft is carrying classified experiments. There is no one on board. For additional stories, visit voanews.com. I'm Alexis Strope, VOA News.
Good morning, Africa. Welcome to Daybreak Africa from the Voice of America. I am Chinedu Ofo in Washington. Today is Friday, December 29th. And here are some of the stories we are covering. Clashes intensify between M23 rebels and the army in parts of Eastern Democratic Republic of Congo as citizens await results of the December 20th general elections.
In the aftermath of the December 20th elections, M23 rebels have resumed attacks on the positions of self-defense resistance fighters and the Congolese army near the town of Sake.
The death toll from an oil tanker explosion in central Liberia rises to more than 40. The Sudanese Journalist Syndicate urges the rapid support forces in Al Jazeera State to ensure the safety of civilians and media workers. Growing attacks on merchant vessels navigating the Red Sea are forcing ships to travel around Africa to transport goods to Europe and North American markets.
About 19,000 ships navigate the Suez Canal every year, making it one of the world's key routes, especially for fossil fuels and goods moving between Asia and Europe.
And Christmas and New Year messages from our listeners. Those stories plus Samson O'Malley's sports are coming up on Daybreak Africa. Clashes have intensified between the powerful M23 rebels and the army in parts of Eastern Democratic Republic of Congo as Congolese await the results of the December 20th general elections. As Zenem Netizaidi reports, the violence has some residents fleeing to other areas for safety.
In the aftermath of the December 20th elections, M23 rebels have resumed attacks on the positions of self-defense resistance fighters and the Congolese army near the town of Sake in the eastern province of North Kivu. Locals say the attacks have been happening in the hills around the village of Mushaki, which rebels seized recently, and the village of Karuba, both of them in an area called the Masisi Territory. Ombeni Balingene, a resident of Sake, criticizes the conditions in which people like him have been spending the Christmas season. He says since December 20th, after the elections, clashes have started in the Mushaki Mountains, from where people are fleeing and arriving in large numbers here in Sake. We didn't have a very good Christmas because we thought every second that the M33 rebels were going to enter the town, as there was the crackling of bullets and the explosion of bombs in large numbers. In a statement read out by Lieutenant Colonel Guillaume Njike Kaiko, an Nami spokesman in North Kivu, the military speaks of a violation of a ceasefire called for by the United States. The military also threatens to take consequent decisions against the rebels and the Rwandan army, which, according to him, supports the rebels. He says every day these rebels attack positions held by the loyalist army and reservists, ignoring the ceasefire recommended by the United States of America and the international community. Every day, Rwandan troops continue to enter Congolese territory, disrupting the ceasefire process. If this situation continues, the armed forces of the Democratic Republic of Congo will take the necessary steps to respond to these provocations. New displacements of civilians have been reported since last week as a result of these clashes, and Masisi Territory human rights defender Tumsifu Bazungu is calling on the government to find solutions to the humanitarian situation facing the internally displaced. Bazungu says the humanitarian situation is severely critical because humanitarians are unable to respond normally to the needs of the displaced. Hence our appeal to the government to act as quickly as possible for our populations present in camps. Masisi and another area, Rutshuru, were excluded from the electoral process because of the security situation in the eastern part of Congo. Like Masisi, Rutshuru is in the hands of the M23 rebels. Eastern Congo is a mineral-rich region Despite Congo's large reserves of minerals like gold and cobalt, it remains an impoverished nation. Zanemneti Zaidi, VOA News, Goma, in the Democratic Republic of Congo.
The Sudanese Journalist Syndicate is urging the Rapid Support Forces, who recently assumed control of a significant portion of Al Jazeera state from the South Armed Forces, to ensure the safety of civilians and journalists. They are also calling on the international community and the RSF to establish secure routes through which journalists and civilians can escape conflict areas. Nabil Biagio spoke with Abdelmonim Abu Idris, president of the syndicate, who is currently stuck in Al Jazeera state.
Tens of thousands of civilians, they are in the war zone areas, especially down like Madani and small town North Madani, Kwal Hasahisa, and other villages around Madani. Those people, they under the exchange of fires and the rapid support of fires, they took control of most of Jazeera states. They are raid the houses, they loot the properties, looted their cars, and the journalists, many journalists, we report that many journalists have been stopped and questioned by rapid support members, and we are really worried about their safety because they have been scattered in many villages in South Jazeera and East Jazeera and Central Jazeera. And there is no vehicles to take them to any place they want. We ask the international community and the international organization to put their pressure on rapid support to open safety corridors for the civilians, especially for the journalists, to leave the war zone areas to the safety areas.
Do we know if journalists are being deliberately targeted because of their job, because of what they do?
We have reports. Many journalists have been stopped by rapid support forces, and they are members, and they have been questioned, and they have stopped for... till now, we didn't have any report of real attack, but have been questioned, and they have been stopped. And they have been asked why they are in these areas and from where they came for this one, because this attack with these questions, we are really concerned about their safety.
Tens of thousands of people fled Khartoum and they ended up in Al Jazeera. They sought refuge there, including many journalists who decided to stay in Sudan, including yourself when you left Khartoum. But now it seems like Al Jazeera is a war zone with the RSF expanding, now about to enter Sinnar. Are you being displaced again? Are journalists and civilians being displaced again?
Tens of thousands of civilians and tens of journalists have been displaced again from Madani to other areas. Some of them reach Sinnar. Some of them have been, as I said before, have been scattered in the villages around Madani. I have been displaced again. And the problem is that when we displace, there is no safety corridors to leave the war zone areas. We are being stuck in the war zone areas, and there is no vehicles. The oil stations have been closed completely. If you want to leave the area, you have to walk for 10 kilometers, and it's not safety because you can't been stopped, you have been looted, you have been, you can come under the exchange of fires.
Thank you very much, Abu Idris, for speaking with me, and please be safe and good luck.
That's VOA's Nabil Biagio speaking with Abdelmonim Abu Idris, president of the Sudanese Journalist Syndicate in Al Jazeera State. Attacks on merchant vessels navigating in the Red Sea are forcing ships to travel around Africa to transport goods to Europe and North American markets. But major African ports on the continent's east coast, Mombasa and Dar es Salaam, are too small to handle so many big ships in a short period of time. This means most of the pressures on South African ports themselves racked by multiple challenges. Darren Taylor reports.
About 19,000 ships navigate the Suez Canal every year, making it one of the world's key routes, especially for fossil fuels and goods moving between Asia and Europe. To reach the channel, ships must travel through the Red Sea. But Houthi militants allied to Iran are attacking vessels on the route with drones and missiles. The Houthis say they're acting to prevent ships from going to Israel because of its war against Hamas militants in Gaza. International shipping companies are now diverting ships around South Africa's Cape, a much longer and more expensive journey. The disruption has contributed to higher oil prices and choked global supply chains. Gavin Kelly is the director of South Africa's Freight Association. He says the logical ports for ships to restock and refuel are Durban and Cape Town, Africa's two most developed harbors. But these ports and others in South Africa are clogged, mainly because of the collapse of the country's railways, Kelly tells VOA.
That means those exports have to get to the port somehow, and the only somehow, because we can't send it by plane, are trucks. So now we see queues of trucks trying to get into the port, and the port wasn't designed to take hundreds of trucks a day, offloading, turning around and going out. It just wasn't built for that. It was built primarily for rail. So now you have congestion inside the port because the trucks need to be able to offload somewhere. And obviously, it's a laborious process. So entry into the port begins to slow down and you get these long queues of trucks stacking up.
Kelly says tens of thousands of containers are piled up as ports struggle to process them. He adds that regular failures of computer systems and long electricity outages make things worse. In the midst of this chaos, says Kelly, it's going to be very difficult for port workers to process and service extra ships. Kelly describes services at the harbors as the worst they've been in decades, and he says that's mainly because of corruption and mismanagement at State Transport Authority, Transnet. Transnet chairperson Sandile Sanku tells VOA, years of budget cuts are to blame for the company not building enough capacity.
This is going to take time. Nothing is going to happen overnight. We have indicated many a times that we would need to invest in improving our infrastructure. Equipment has deteriorated. This is as a result of many years of underinvestment and many years of under-maintenance.
In May, the World Bank found that South African ports are among the worst performing globally. Andrew Whitfield, a spokesperson for opposition party the Democratic Alliance, says the government must allow private sector companies to help ease the crisis at harbours.
If we're going to extract these efficiencies out of our catalytic infrastructure, which is what our ports are, we need to make sure that the things that the state cannot do are outsourced to the private sector in partnership. You can't attract private investment into the ports unless the private sector has a stake. The Port of Durban, there's certainly some very good moves in that direction, and we hope that that has a knock-on effect to other ports. Because at the end of the day, it's business that relies on ports. Business and government need to work together in order to make sure that we get the best out of our ports.
The Freight Association's Kelly says rerouted ships and their cargo could be delayed for weeks at South African harbours. Meanwhile, the United States has formed a multinational naval force to protect ships traveling the Red Sea. Yesterday, the Pentagon announced its forces had shot down several missiles and drones in the region. For VOA News, I'm Darren Taylor in Johannesburg.
You are listening to Daybreak Africa on The Voice of America. I am Chinedu Ofor in Washington. Today is Friday, December 29th. For more African news and features, visit our website at voaafrica.com. Connect with us on all social media platforms. We're on Facebook, Twitter, and Instagram. Still to come on our program, Samson O'Malley's Sports. Central Africa has for months been plagued with acute shortages that has stifled regional economic growth, disrupted local businesses, and contributed to rising food prices and social unrest. The shortages are partly blamed on increased demand coupled with disruptions in supply and on illegal trades in conflict zones. Moki Edwin Kinzeka reports from Yaoundé, Cameroon.
Officials in several Central African states say vehicle owners, truck drivers and motorcyclists in major cities wait for several hours, sometimes days, to fill their tanks as pumps have been regularly running dry since fuel shortages started several months ago. Cameroonian officials partly blame ongoing disruptions to stormy weather off the Atlantic coast, stranding cargo ships at the regional hub port of Lomé, Togo. The landlocked Central African Republic, which receives fuel supplies through Cameroon's Douala seaport, also reports disruptions. Aid agencies in the country, which has been hit by sectarian violence, say if nothing is done to stop the fuel crisis, delivery of needed humanitarian aid will be affected. A severe fuel crisis is also stirring social unrest in Chad. Officials there report protests in the capital, N'Djamena, and in towns including Bongor, Mundu, Faya-Lajor, and Abéché, where the military this week said it dispersed protesters with tear gas. Chad's military government said this week that its troops seized hundreds of containers of fuel illegally transported to the border with Sudan. Chad says contraband fuel trade increased on its border with Sudan since ferocious fighting broke out in Sudan's civil war in April. Amina Ehimi Torna is the Director General of Chad's Downstream Sector Regularization Authority, which is responsible for the regulation, control and monitoring of standards of petroleum operations there.
Les marketeurs, arrêtez d'exporter.
She says merchants should immediately stop illegal exports to neighboring countries that are also facing severe fuel shortages. Turner says gasoline and diesel fuel are highly combustible and should not be stored in jerry cans and buckets at home with the hope of selling to illegal vendors at exorbitant rates should the ongoing fuel shortage persist. Sudan's fighting shut down businesses and forced civilians and fuel merchants to flee the northeastern African state. Chadian officials say Sudanese civilians who braved the fighting, as well as troops of Sudan's National Army and a rival national paramilitary force, rushed to Chad's porous 1,400-kilometer border for fuel regularly. Moki Edwin Kinzeka, VOA News, Yaoundé, Cameroon.
And it's time now for Daybreak Africa Sports. And here is Samson O'Malley in Abuja, Nigeria. A very good Friday morning to you, Samson.
Good Friday morning to you too, Chinedu. We begin the sport with cricket as South Africa shredded through the Indian batting lineup to claim victory by an earnings and 32 runs in the first test on Thursday, securing the win inside 3 days and ensuring their proud home record against the tourists remains intact. The home attack dismissed India for 131 in their second earnings after South Africa had earlier scored 408 for a 163-run first earnings lead at Centurion. Only Virat Kohli provided any resistance in an alarming collapse as Doubleton Nandre Boga took 4 wickets, Marco Jensen 3 and Kagiso Rabada 2. The second and final test starts on the 3rd of January at Newlands in Cape Town, South Africa. In volleyball news, the Nigerian Volleyball Federation has invited 37 players to camp in preparations for the 2024 African Games qualifiers billed for Lagos from the 4th to the 8th of January 2024. According to NVBF, 19 men and 18 women reported to the Ahmedu Bello Stadium camp in northwest Nigeria on the 26th of December, while training commenced on the 27th of December. Now to the Africa Cup of Nations 2023, with barely 16 days to the start of
of the tournament, participating countries are already naming their final squad with few surprises. Africa Cup of Nations host Ivory Coast included a smattering of overseas stars in their 27-man squad. The Ivory Coast French manager Jean-Louis Gaza has called up Borussia Dortmund striker Sebastian Haller, Monaco defender Wilfred Singo, and midfielders Ibrahim Sangare of Premier League side Nottingham Forest, Siko Fofana of Al Nassr, and Frank Kisili of Al Ahly. But missing from Gaza's list are Galatasaray forward Wilfred Zaha and Besiktas defender Eric Bailly. In the indomitable lines of Cameroon squad, Bayern Munich striker Eric-Maxim Choupo-Moting is a notable absentee from Cameroon's Africa Cup of Nations squad, unveiled by head coach Rigobert Song on Thursday. The five-time champions, who last won it in 2017, are drawn in Group C alongside Senegal, Gambia and Guinea. Staying with squad announcement, Burnley forward Leal Foster has been left out of the South African 2024 Africa Cup of Nations squad despite returning to action after recovering from an unspecified mental health issue. Away from the Africa Cup of Nations 2023 now to athletics, where organizers of the New Balance Indoor Grand Prix have announced that world champion and Ethiopian middle and long distance runner Gudaf Sige will compete at the World Athletics Indoor Tour Gold Meeting on the 4th of February. She has won world titles at 1,500 meters indoors, as well as 5,000 meters and 10,000 meters outdoors. And that's it for this Friday's edition of Daybreak Africa Sports. I am Samson Omale in Abuja, Nigeria. It's back to you, Chinedu, in Washington.
Thank you very much, Samson, and you have a wonderful weekend. We bring you new holiday greetings from our listeners.
Happy New Year.
Good morning, great gentlemen and ladies all over the world, most especially VOA News English to Africa Clue. I wish you a happy new year in advance. My name is Innocent Nonso. I'm listening right now from my village in Nneni, Anocha Local Government, Anambra State, Nigeria.
Hello VOA, I'm Thomas Kunside in South Sudan, Yonglei State, Banga County. I'm hereby to send my best regards to my children who are currently living in Uganda. Happy New Year of 2024 to you. The year of 2024, I wish it will be the year of peace in South Sudan. Happy New Year.
Please send your Christmas and New Year messages to the following VOA WhatsApp number, 202-258-3076. Once again, the number is 202-258-3076 plus one. And that's it for this Friday, December 29th edition of Daybreak Africa. We thank you so much for spending your week with us. For more African news and features, visit our website at voaafrica.com. Connect with us on all social media platforms, including Facebook, Twitter, and Instagram. We're also on YouTube, where you can watch our TV shows, Africa 54, Straight Talk Africa, and Red Carpet. On behalf of the entire Daybreak crew, I'm Chinedu Ofor in Washington, wishing you a great weekend. We'll see you again Monday morning.
Military coups, cost of living crisis, and climate change shocks were some of Africa's challenges in 2023. But it was a year that also marked the first Africa Climate Summit that brought hope, showcasing the continent's climate leadership on the global stage. On this week's episode of Our Voices, we will discuss some of the biggest events we covered in 2023 as we bring in the new year. Join the conversation Wednesdays at 1900 UTC.